We can persuade Daddy to let Anodyne protect Rowan and me. Is there any news from Doc about the repair team? They're here now. Claire flew above the hole and looked down. Out of the ground, two plant slimes, two bug slimes that looked like ants, and a mimic slime popped up. The plant slimes immediately grew a scaffolding made of vines that connected the bottom floor to the floor in Millie's room. The bug slimes then began to gather various pieces of wood into a pile, and the mimic slime crawled up to the top of the scaffold. It waved its tentacle in a parody of a salute, to which Claire answered with a salute of her own.
Doc says the slimes will be done after lunch, Claire informed Millie. The tunnel to the dungeon will be moved to your practice yard and properly hidden, and Rowan will be returned tomorrow morning. It's your turn in the dungeon once he returns.
All right, Millie acknowledged. Let's locate Anodyne then. Can your magic track her? Claire shook her head.
Not after this long in a human settlement. Maybe if we were underground or in the woods. We have the next best thing, however.
To illustrate her point, she pointed at the two patiently waiting puppies on the floor.
We have her scent, Isla said. We can track her, Aisha declared.
In that case, let me carry... The pups jumped away from Millie's arms and growled at her.
Don't touch us, they cried out against her.
Girls, that's not polite, Claire scolded.
The twins hung their heads at their chastisement, but still gave Millie a determined glare.
It's all right, Claire, Millie calmed her friend. They don't trust me because it was people like me that killed their original pack, correct? In that case, if you could give me the chance to earn their trust.
We will never trust adventurers, even little adventurers.
The twins rejected her offer as they continued to glare.
You are an ally, but when this alliance is over and you enter the dungeon, we shall eat you and devour your meat.
Millie giggled and gave them a cute wink.
We'll see, won't we?
The two pups gave her a humph in their little puppy bark.
They're so cute, Millie said to Claire.
I know, aren't they?
She agreed. However, Claire privately sighed at the twins' reluctance to be touched by Millie. It had been so long since their real mother had passed, yet their hate was still as strong as ever. They normally hid it well, except during their fights, but the alliance with Millie had brought their feelings back in a way they couldn't deal with. What was worse, Claire was worried that having the puppies lead them would result in other humans attempting to pet them, an action that would surely result in a bite. However, Millie mused out, if you girls insist on walking ahead to lead, it's possible someone else will try to pet you or pick you up. Claire glanced over at Millie and brightened at a sudden idea.
Girls, why don't you both climb into Millie's bag? Claire suggested. That way, Millie won't touch you, and you can hide from other adventurers that would want to pet you.
The twins exchanged looks as they considered their options.
We'll get in the bag, but...
Isla began.
Not because we trust you, Aisha finished.
Persuaded by Claire's words, the wargs scampered into one of the larger bags on the floor, a remnant of the previous night's shenanigans. After squirming around in the bag, two little noses popped into view. Millie picked up the bag and hoisted it over her shoulder, with one nose at one end of the bag and the other at the opposite end. Claire followed their lead and dived into her normal pocket, poking her head out once she was situated.
We're ready,
the twins mentally signaled. After verifying that Fred was still sound asleep, the girl slipped out of the tavern into the morning air. The twins began sniffing the air, directing Millie to turn the bag.
Her smell is that way,
they reported after a few minutes.
So, she went to Irontown, Millie observed, as she began walking toward the gate. That's where most of the exit holes are, right, Claire?
That's right, Claire acknowledged. As long as she stays in this part of the city, she won't run the risk of dissolving. She's still liable to have fallen unconscious without a more direct connection to Doc, though.
The twins kept their noses hidden in the bag as Millie walked through the gate, nodding to the guards.
Excuse me, miss, one of the guards stopped her. But I think you should avoid coming into Irontown today. It's very chaotic right now.
What happened? Millie asked in concern. Was there another murder? The other guard shook his head warily.
In a sad way, I wish that's all that happened. Hey, keep it down, the first guard growled warily.
The other guard gave his partner a tired look.
Do you think now's the time to be hiding things from the civilians? She'll hear about it sooner or later.
The first grunted, but seemingly relented, and turned his head away.
So, what happened? Millie pushed.
The other guard shook his head.
You remember the adventurers and rangers left a few days ago for some mission? Well, stragglers appeared last night. Actually, it would be better to call them survivors. Those poor bastards were barely able to speak after getting treated by the healers. We've been getting a few more from the Westgate since then.
Millie held her hands up as she covered a gasp.
Oh no, does that mean they failed?
The guard shrugged.
Who knows, it's not for our ears. What I can say is that we probably lost a lot of good adventurers and rangers. I hope whatever they were doing was worth it.
Millie bowed in thanks.
Thank you for telling me, Sir Guard. I have an appointment at the Adventurers Guild, however, so I must pass through.
The guard shrugged.
All right, but stay safe, you hear? Things seem to be getting more dangerous these days.
After saying her farewells, Millie slipped through the gate and slowly made her way down the main road.
What do you think, Claire? Millie asked mentally. Do you think the adventurers succeeded or failed?
Does it matter? Claire sighed in disappointment. The fact that they lost so many, when it's clear your town needs all the able fighters it can get, shows how much a waste the mission was. Unless they brought back some magical weapon or teleportation artifact, I doubt anyone's going to be very happy. Doc's going to be very upset when he learns how many playthings he lost.
Good riddance, the twins muttered.
Hush, girls, Claire reprimanded. Even if you hate adventurers, remember that they're the important source of magic for the dungeon. Any loss of life outside of it is a waste. Do you girls still smell anodyne?
The human is going the right way, they reported. Her smell follows this road.
Why? Was she on the main road? Millie questioned. This is one of the worst places for her to be. No cover, full visibility, and no turns.
Perhaps something called her, Claire mentally whispered.
Like what? Claire hesitated.
Millie, you asked Anodyne why she was so much more intelligent last night, correct?
She waited until Millie nodded.
Well, the answer is that Anodyne is a unique existence in more ways than one. Tell me, have you ever heard of the word avatar?
Avatar? That's one of the words I learned in my divine studies at the Adventurers Guild, Millie remembered.
That's when a god or goddess chooses a vessel to embody their godly self for a visit to the world.
Are you saying Anodyne is a goddess in disguise?
No, no, Claire allayed Millie's shock. You see, dungeons can also create avatars, except rather than embodying the dungeon's mind, the avatar serves as a means for the dungeon to communicate with the outside world. Think of it as the dungeon's representative. This inborn ability is only found in dungeons that have reached the complete level of sentience that Doc has. Anodyne was originally Doc's unknowing avatar. In other words, she used to be human like you. Her name was Diana.
Millie tripped over a rock and barely caught herself.
Anodyne was the princess.
She barely kept her inner voice down to a low screech.
Yes, she was, Claire agreed. However, her life was lost due to outside interference, and she was thus reincarnated into Doc's champion. After devouring the dungeon crystal shards of the undead dungeon, she regained her intelligence without her memories. As you could see yesterday, service to Doc has been the number one priority up until she began practicing acting like an adventurer. Whatever you made her wear last night seems to have triggered something within her soul.
She has a soul? Millie gasped.
But she's a monster.
Indeed. While I don't understand the magic behind what happened, Anodyne's human form became Doc's avatar while retaining her identity as a chosen. A dungeon avatar consigns their soul to the dungeon in the same way a chosen like yourself or a warlock does with their chosen deity or demon lord. Unlike higher deities, dungeons can only have one avatar at a time, and an avatar's support is limited to within the dungeon. However, human avatars have never been reported having their souls become the dungeons after death. I can only believe that her chosen abilities carried over upon her death.
Claire, Millie thought suddenly. The outfit Anodyne wore before disappearing, it was of the style of Guildmaster Mary's disciples, including the princess. If what you say is true, then perhaps seeing herself in her old style of clothes jogged something in her soul. If she followed the main road, she would have ended up at the Adventurers Guild.
Mama, the twins interrupted. Anodyne's smell goes into that building ahead of us.
The Adventurers Guild, Millie and Claire muttered together as they beheld the large building at the end of the main road. The building was overflowing with activity as stretchers holding wounded were being carried in and workers and guards rushed in and out of the guild. Other guards were creating a perimeter to prevent townspeople from approaching. The air was filled with shouting, the moans of the dying, the worried cries of family members, and the stench of desperation. Millie ducked into an alley and gazed upon the building.
If she's inside, there is a good chance she's been imprisoned somewhere. We're going to have to break in somehow,
Claire whispered in Millie's mind.
We can create a distraction, the twins offered.
Violence isn't the answer here, Millie countered. However, I do know one way to get in without being noticed.
All right, Rowan, enjoy your break, Doc announced cheerfully. I'm going to adjust the parameters of the trap so that they don't inflict as much pain so quickly.
You do that, Rowan groaned as he dragged himself over to a pink slime.
He sighed in contentment as the warmth of healing spread through his body at the slime's touch.
That blasted dog is going to get me killed, Rowan thought to himself. If that happens, then it's for the best, Rowan also thought. This way, I can prove my usefulness and help my master perfect his traps.
Rowan growled and clutched his aching head. Ever since he had returned to the dungeon, two different voices had been echoing in his head. One him, and the other also him. It was like the undead part that had been absorbed into Doc had taken on its own personality that established itself in Rowan's mind.
We can't both be Rowan, he argued. You need a name.
I'm Rowan, but I agree you do need a name, Rowan countered. Shaking his head at the continued argument, Rowan picked up the pink slime and placed it on his head, letting the healing magic permeate his body. The voices disappeared under the weight of the magic, and Rowan, the human Rowan, sighed in relief.
Doc, can I walk around the dungeon? He asked.
You'll need to stay on the boss floors, but other than that, go ahead.
Doc mentally waved off the human. With a thought, Rowan disappeared from the 26th floor and appeared on the 15th floor. There, he walked over to a ladder and climbed down the slime-covered part of the floor. A gray slime approached him and nuzzled his legs. Rowan chuckled as he rubbed the bone and blood slimes around his legs. As slimes born of his influence, specifically his flesh and magic, Rowan shared a special connection to the bone and blood slimes. After suffering through Doc's special version of hell, he had discovered the slime's natural friendly disposition to him, and had stayed with them during his infrequent breaks from suffering.
Anything interesting to show me?
Rowan asked rhetorically. The slimes were not intelligent enough to understand words, but he felt better talking to them like real people. In a surprising move, however, the slimes slipped away from Rowan and moved down the floor away from him. Their jiggling changed, almost as if they were trying to communicate with him.
Can slimes actually communicate?
Rowan couldn't help but wonder out loud.
Of course they can, Doc suddenly cut through the darkness. It's just they never have anything interesting to say. Claire said they're a lot like bees and can communicate simple things like where food can be found and what isn't tasty. The blood and bone slimes consider you an older slime and are trying to communicate to you.
What are they saying? Rowan asked.
Something about food and location, which makes no sense, since there isn't any food in the dungeon. Doc seemingly shrugged. You can follow them, I suppose. No harm seeing what their tiny cores want.
Rowan followed the bone and blood slimes through the floor till they reached what looked like a collapsed tunnel.
Doc, what is this? Rowan asked curiously.
Oh, that's one of the old invasion tunnels from the undead dungeon, Doc reported after a moment's analyzation. I couldn't destroy them, as my magic influence doesn't extend into the surrounding dirt, so I just collapsed the entrances. I suppose the slimes can squeeze through the cracks to the other side. I didn't think there was anything over there, though, since, from what I heard, the undead dungeon completely collapsed.
Rowan scratched his chin as an idea came to him.
Hey, Doc, he spoke up. Do you mind if I evacuate this tunnel with the slimes?
I don't really mind, but why?
Rowan's face grew a slight smile. I had a thought about finding something useful. Chapter 22.
I call to order this emergency meeting of the town council, Mary announced, punctuating her words with the sound of her hammer hitting the wooden table. Unlike the previous meeting, the atmosphere stank of anger and sadness. Mary herself was fighting to keep her fury under control, as her eyes couldn't help but glare at the prince. Prince James sat alone at the table, no advisor behind his back. He looked haggard, as if his princely face had aged a few more years in the span of a few days. Mary felt no sympathy towards him after reading and hearing the reports from her adventurers, her surviving adventurers, that was. In place of the head temple knight, Orso, Priest Horus sat looking thoughtful and worried. His hand was clutching an icon of what looked to be a symbol of Durin. His aide, Priest Henry, stood respectfully behind him. Forcus, Stevens, and Grecian were also present in their respective seats. Only Helen, who had sent a runner citing research breakthroughs as her reason for not coming, and Representative Gran were missing. Gran's empty seat made Mary's heart lurch in sadness.
First order of business.
Mary's icy voice betrayed no sentiments of pain.
The results of the city expedition formed by the prince. I leave it to you, my prince, to announce the results.
James shuddered, as if waking from a deep trance. He coughed and stood up, drawing all eyes to him.
Last meeting, I was granted permission to begin conscription for the armed forces. With my permission, every adventurer was conscripted into the army and put under the command of my younger brother, Acting Ranger General Kenneth.
The room was filled with quiet murmuring.
Prince, Priest Horus spoke up. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my liaison did not hear you ask to conscript the adventurers in the last meeting. Was this decision made on your own?
James inwardly winced as he nodded his head.
That is correct, Priest Horus. Upon the conclusion of the previous meeting, my generals and advisors drew up a plan to reclaim specific artifacts crucial to our nation's future. Upon the testimony of Adventurer Fiora, it was decided that the mission would fail without the support of the adventurers. A call was put out to forcefully recruit all adventurers under the previous agreement that the army was allowed to conscript all guards.
By artifacts, are you referring to the royal seals used to create the country's currency?
Grecian spoke up.
Yes, James answered.
The room was once again filled with a dull murmuring.
Continue, Mary said, her voice almost growling.
The room fell silent once again.
A few days ago, James continued, I sent off the Ranger and Adventurer Task Force to the former city of Durin. They were there to infiltrate the city without being noticed and retrieve the seals. If possible, they were also to retrieve the city's gold reserve. However, his voice shook in pain. Our plan was apparently foreseen by the enemy. According to the testimony of the survivors, upon breaking into the secret room where the seals were previously kept, the Rangers encountered a large horde of fleshling monsters. They were set upon, and communication was lost. At the same time, the adventurers at the base camp were assaulted by a mix of summoned demons and warlocks. The attack was sudden,
and many magic users were killed before they could regroup. As a result, the task force split and splintered as they ran for their lives in complete rout. Survivors began appearing last night at the gates, and a few more have been appearing every few hours. It's my regret to announce the mission as a complete and utter failure.
Mary gripped her hands into fists beneath the table. Prince James, your actions have resulted in the destruction of not only your Ranger Corps, but also my precious adventurers, who, by all rights, had no business being a part of this suicide mission. Why don't you clarify to this council exactly what you were thinking?
Mary's voice roared out at the end, shaking the entire room with the ferocity of her tone. James bowed his head. Master Mary, I have no words to express my grief. I never meant...
No, you didn't mean for this to happen, right?
Mary chuckled sarcastically.
I just want to know two things. How do you plan on justifying the conscription of adventurers, and what was your reason to attempt such a suicide mission?
Reflexively, James's eyes darted behind him to the empty spot where his advisor once stood.
Oh, no, Mary grinned like a cat. I had your advisor locked out of this meeting. He can puff all he wants, but he is not welcome here. I want to hear from your own mouth why you did what you did.
James looked around the table and found no sympathy or support. For the first time in his life, he was all alone. He immediately deflated, and his eyes turned hollow. After Grecian's report in the last meeting, I was told repeatedly how important it was that the country has a starting point for when we return to rebuild. I believed that we needed the seals and the treasury to continue being, that without it, our people would be scattered through the winds and Durin would be no more. I couldn't bear to imagine such a bleak future, to think that the sacrifice my parents made would be for nothing. The adventurers were the key. James continued morosely. I trusted Fiora's speech to my generals, even though many said it would be foolish to rely on undisciplined mercenaries. I countered my advisors and decided that the loose definition of who I could conscript would be enough to take every adventurer into my army without violating any law. In the end, however, I appear to have doomed both groups. Mary released a heavy sigh she seemed to be keeping inside her.
Prince James, you've committed a grave folly, not only to your people, but to yourself as well. You undermined the powers this council gave you in the misguided belief that currency makes a nation. Not only that, but you put your trust in the wrong people.
Prince James sat up and gave her a puzzled, questioning look. Mary shook her head.
While I am indeed disappointed with your actions, this council was not convened to set a punishment for you. We will speak in private later about such matters, a courtesy you owe me.
She glared at the prince, who could do nothing but nod in agreement with her. Mary returned her attention to the other members of the table.
Suffice it to say, the failure of the mission has created more complications. Everyone is aware of this disaster, and I expect riots to soon begin. I convened this council to discuss future actions against the Empire's forces, the beheading murderer, and our own people. Have you all read the reports?
I have, Master Mary, Priest Horus began.
And I wish to pose a question. Are we certain the beheading murderer is a slime from the dungeon? If this were true, then we would be facing an enemy within our walls and an enemy outside our walls. While the evidence conclusively points towards a slime, I have yet to see solid proof that the dungeon was involved, Mary answered. However, the revelation that the dungeon has hidden entrances into Iron Town is suspect, showing that the dungeon has designs for this town, at the very least.
Master Mary, Grecian spoke up, is it not true that the dungeon participated in the battle with the Tomb of the Forgotten King? Perhaps these holes are remnants of that fight.
It is possible, Mary acknowledged. My mages have informed me that the holes themselves are composed of dungeon rock, meaning that the dungeon has not spread its influence into the town itself. However, The holes connect directly to the dungeon and were made some time after the tomb's invasion.
May I ask, in the Master's opinion,
Forcus interrupted,
which is the greater threat, the demons or the slimes? We enchanters can only assign a single type of bane enchantment to copper and iron weapons. Otherwise, the metal will break after a few uses.
I believe the prince has been working with Witch Helen on this matter. Mary eyed the silent prince to her left. James rubbed his forehead. Helen has claimed her work to be on the edge of a breakthrough, in that she is close to creating the perfect dungeon bane enchantment. If she does complete it, then the weapons we have can easily be re-enchanted into the perfect weapons to attack the dungeon. She has even claimed to have created a large stockpile of demon bane enchantment potions to be used after dealing with the dungeon to return our weapons to their previous form. Stevens and Forcus exchanged a confused look.
We have heard no such thing from Helen, Stevens explained. In fact, she and her witches seem to have disappeared, mostly from their workplaces. The few witches I have seen recently have been incredibly distracted. I suppose they could have been hard at work creating a stockpile of demon bane potions. However, those potions are not meant to be permanent enchantments, but instead temporary enhancers. It is slightly odd for her to claim the potions could be used to return a weapon to its previous form.
Not only that,
Forcus continued next to Stevens,
but at this point in time, the dungeon has not proven to be the aggressor. Her work may be viable now, but it won't help us survive a demon invasion.
If I may, Priest Horus interjected, I would like to hear more about our forces. Without the rangers and adventurers, who else can we bring to arms?
How many temple knights and priests could you field at a moment's notice?
The meeting continued. Through it all, however, Mary's mind kept shifting back to the collapsed adventurer her receptionists had found on the steps of the guild, the one who had looked so like the Princess Diana. She resolved to check on her the moment the meeting was finished. Anodyne, wake up. Please, you must wake up. Diana, you're late for practice. The slime known as Anodyne awoke with a start. Her eyes saw an unfamiliar ceiling, and she heard unfamiliar voices around her. Reflexively, she closed her eyes and lay perfectly still. She was a hunter, and she would analyze the situation before acting. Using her slime core, Anodyne sensed the world around her. She was lying on a bed, a small but long one, and was covered by a blanket. The room she was in was long and filled with similar beds, most of which were occupied by what sounded like injured adventurers. She could hear the crisp sound of their armor, the moans of pain, and gasps of air being inhaled and exhaled. Her area was unique, however, because her bed was shielded by a curtain of some sort, blocking everyone's view. Her mind told her she was in an infirmary, a medical center. She did not know this word, but she trusted her instincts. They had never lied to her before.
Anodyne, can you hear me?
Claire's voice rang in her head.
I can hear you,
Anodyne mentally responded.
What's happened? You disappeared last night and ended up inside the Adventurers Guild. Where are you, and why did you leave?
Anodyne collected her memories and played through them one by one.
I am currently in a large hall filled with beds, an infirmary, she reported. There appear to be other adventurers in beds, with a few humans and elves walking around. I am in a bed separated from the others by some kind of curtain. My memories seem to fragment after putting on my last set of clothes. I am still wearing the clothes and appear not to have been examined by magic.
Anodyne heard Claire's sigh of relief.
Good. If you're there, they haven't discovered that you're a slime monster. They must think you're one of the adventurer survivors, those in the beds. Listen carefully, Anodyne. You need to get out of the guild before they discover you are not human. I'm with Millie, and she knows of a secret way out of the guild. You'll need to listen to our instructions and avoid everyone. Understood, Anodyne murmured.
However, she failed to stop herself from uttering the words out loud, and her tremor sense revealed that an elf had heard her. As the elf physician approached, Anodyne adjusted her body to appear relaxed and maneuvered her chest to rise and fall as if she could breathe. She watched the elf poke his head through the curtain to examine her. After a few tense moments, Anodyne watched the elf leave and close the curtain behind him. "I thought she had awakened," she heard the elf say to a companion. "I suppose it's my ears playing tricks on me. How are the other patients?"
"Not well," the human replied. "The majority are suffering from extreme fatigue, and a few have life-threatening injuries. She's the only unique one who seems to have nothing wrong with her. Master Mary has requested we physically examine her once the other patients are stabilized."
"All right." "They wish to perform physical examination upon me," Anodyne reported. "I need to escape soon." "Right," Claire agreed. "You were lucky that none of the healers had time to thoroughly check on you before being forced to treat the other adventurers. Ah, Millie says that you can exit the infirmary through an outside vent." Anodyne used her tremor sense to examine the upper walls. "They have been sealed with magic of some kind. They seem to be specifically tuned against slimes. The guild must not be taking any chances with that rogue slime," Claire muttered in annoyance. "In that case, it's very likely that the other exits around the building are also warded. You're going to have to leave the same way you came in, through the front door. Claire, I am still wearing the clothes Millie gave me. I cannot change them like I can change my body. You said there were some healers walking around, right? Are they wearing anything like a uniform? Maybe a sash, or a robe, or a coat?" "No, they are dressed normally. Should I shed these clothes and form new ones made of slime? You can't afford to leave any trace behind, otherwise they may track your clothes back to Millie. Is there any way you can use your slime to modify the look of the clothes you are wearing?" Anodyne examined the metal-plated shirt and pants. "I can change the color, but not the design. However, an idea has occurred to me." With a little effort, Anodyne absorbed the metal breastplate into her body, leaving a standard adventurer shirt and pants. She applied a thin layer of blue slime to the clothes, seemingly changing them from brown to green. The effort required the use of her slime magic, however, and Anodyne intuitively sensed she couldn't keep up the effort forever.
"I can disguise the color of the clothes," she said to Claire. "I can also absorb the clothes into my body. I believe they have been moved into Lord Doc's astral bag. As one of Doc's monsters, that ability is in your purview. However, you can only retrieve the items you've stored or what Doc assigns to your defeat."
Anodyne shifted her clothes away, leaving behind her brown-colored slime body. The slime girl used her tremor sense to create a mental picture of the infirmary. She noted the vents and the torches placed along the walls.
"I'm going now," she announced to Claire. "All right, when you reach the front door, we'll create a distraction for you to slip through. Good luck. And if you get caught, kill yourself."
"Yes, ma'am."
Anodyne couldn't stop a small smile from appearing on her face. Once her mind had stopped worrying about her situation, Anodyne had begun to think more about it. She was inside the Adventurer's Guild, the main base of her lord's prey. She could disguise herself and use her slime body to move around. A flash of light.
"Don't push yourself too hard, Diana," the red-haired adventurer lectured her. "Know your limits."
Anodyne's body felt disoriented for a moment, the strange memory playing around in her head. She pushed it away, trying to concentrate on her mission. Her mission? What did she need to do?
I need to know, Anodyne remembered.
The prey suspected her master. She needed to find their plans to tell her lord how the prey planned on attacking him.
Leader? I need to find the leader of the prey, Anodyne realized. Need to leave first.
Taking action, Anodyne let her human form melt into her original slime form. Silently, quietly, she stretched her body into a snake and slithered down to the floor.
She peeked a tentacle under the curtain and, confirming no one was nearby, practically flew across the floor and up the wall to the ceiling. Once she gathered all her slime, she zigzagged across the ceiling to the door, keeping to the darkest parts of the ceiling. She waited until the door closed before sliding her slime through a crack between the door and ceiling. However, she discovered that her core was unable to follow her slime through the crack. She retreated back into the room and slung herself across the top of the door, changing color to match the wooden frame. She waited until the door was opened and swiftly moved her core and a little slime to the other side. Once the door was closed and the healer had left, Anodyne recollected herself and zoomed down the ceiling of the hallway. She was forced to pause as the hallway ended in a large foyer, the main room of the guild. It was filled with light and activity, hindering her efforts to move through the building.
Wait, Anodyne realized. Why am I thinking of this building like the dungeon?
Anodyne let loose, and her slime rolled like a wave across the ceiling, back to the other end. Using her tactile senses, she discovered a hole in the floorboards large enough for her small core to slip through. Following her mental direction, her body flowed up to the second floor. The slime girl found herself in an unused room filled with paper. The word records echoed in her mind, but she ignored it as she moved a tentacle underneath the room's door to check her surroundings. There were no adventurers on the second floor, and her tremor sense did not sense any movement either. She used a tentacle to open the door wide enough for her core to slip through, and closed it behind her. The second floor held one small hallway, leading to the room in which she had been, and an L-shaped balcony that held a large door and a staircase.
Leader will be in the room, Anodyne thought to herself.
She turned back into a thin puddle and slithered out onto the wooden balcony and to the large oaken door. Anodyne sensed magic cast on the door and decided to avoid trying to open it on her own. She used tremor sense to find another entrance. Thankfully, a former mouse hole was in the far wall to the left of the door, the occupants long dead from magic. She entered the mousy hole and zoomed through the corridors until she found the exit into the leader's room. She easily entered it. The slime girl was met with the sight of a tidy room with a desk in front of a window and a few bookshelves on the wall. The room was the epitome of organization. A flash of light.
Being organized in mind and habit keeps you alert, an elf adventurer lectured. Once you have a system, you can easily find what doesn't belong.
Stop it! Go away!
Anodyne hissed uselessly to herself. Her form almost destabilized from the shock of she wasn't sure what it was. She tried to put it aside. It was not important. Anodyne slipped over to the desk and shifted through the papers on it. Thanks to her shared connection to Rowan, she had learned to read through his eyes. The papers were worthless to her. Reports on the flood, market convenience, construction budgets, and others. She needed more. Her slime eyes turned to the bookshelves. A flurry of tentacles squirmed into every nook and cranny, each holding her attention as she examined everything her body touched. In her haste, one of her tentacles knocked over a chest. A blue folder fell onto the floor. A sudden feeling of apprehension rising in her mind, Anodyne shifted a tentacle to search the folder. And she froze. Her mind analyzed the contents quickly. Reports on the wandering boss, notes on abilities and appearance, a chart of the progression of strength, various reports from adventurers who met it, and a magical drawing taken from the mind of a victim. It was her.
She's been searching for me, Anodyne realized in shock. The leader has been tracking me. Why?
A question burned inside her, making her forget her previous goal. The folder held nothing else of use, however. Anodyne hit the floor in frustration. The force tipped the chest over onto its bottom, revealing a picture on the inside of the lid. It was a picture of two women and a girl. The red-haired adventurer and the elf adventurer were on either side of the girl, smiling at the magical painter. The girl in the middle was smiling shyly, holding a sword with a name carved onto it. Diana Duran. Diana. Anid. Anodyne. Suddenly, the slime girl could no longer hold back the torrent of images that screamed through her mind. She wept, yet no one could hear her.
"Is she ready yet?"
Millie asked again.
"No,"
Claire answered again. The two of them and the wargs were waiting in the alley closest to the Adventurers Guild. The girls were playing a card game on the ground, using an old set Fred had lying around.
"I win this hand," Millie declared, placing her cards down with a smirk. "Not bad, but I win,"
Claire countered smoothly, her face the epitome of a smirk. Millie cursed and muttered under her breath as she reclaimed the cards and shuffled them together.
"Claire, I am ready to leave,"
Anodyne's voice sounded through the mental link. Millie jumped to her feet, grabbing the bag with the twins in it, and placed Claire back safely in her pocket. She rubbed her hands together in anticipation.
"We hear you," Claire sent back on behalf of Millie. "Get ready to exit."
She turned her head to look up at Millie.
"Are you sure your plan will work?"
Millie gave her a thumbs up.
"Don't worry, this will work. Thanks to the lessons I took with that priest, I can use my powers even without the daggers."
With a flourish of her sleeve, Millie produced three ordinary throwing daggers. Muttering a prayer to Temtra, the chosen girl threw the daggers into the street and pointed her palm at them. When they reached the middle of the road, Millie closed her palm into a fist. A sudden gust of wind buffeted the main road in front of the guild, filling the air with dust and sand. People began crying out in panic as they ran away from the noise and the dust.
"Don't you think that was a little much?" Claire asked as she watched the confusion unfold. "I mean, my idea of creating fake gold coins to throw around would have been safer. We've really poked the hornet's nest with this distraction of yours."
Millie shrugged.
"The fake gold would have been really obvious. Besides, without my special daggers, I'm limited to simple formations, and I needed some practice. I didn't hurt anyone."
She winced at the sound of someone running into the wall of the building she was next to.
"All right, I didn't directly harm anyone. Point is, this can't be tied to me, and if Anodyne can't escape, it can't be tied to her."
"I escaped,"
Anodyne said from behind Millie, startling the young girl into the air with a yelp.
"You scared me," Millie complained, brushing her clothes off. "Are you all right?"
Anodyne nodded with a small smile.
"Yes, thank you for your concern. Shall we get going? Millie, you need to be ready for tonight when you switch with Rowan, and I need to prepare my ruse for your father."
"Oh, right. I forgot about Daddy,"
Millie perked up.
"Since the mission's accomplished, let's go home."
The young girl began humming as she led the disguised slime girl down the road toward the inn.
"Anodyne, are you really all right?"
Claire sent mentally to the girl.
"You were in there a long time."
"I'm fine, Claire,"
Anodyne reassured her.
"I just had to relearn a few things."
Chapter 23.
"Now, Fred,"
Anodyne smiled sweetly.
"As one adventurer to another, you'll know I'll do the very best I can to take care of your daughter and ward, don't you? Leave their care and protection to me, and do not concern yourself with what they are doing while under my care. I promise you, on my guild membership, they will be safe."
Fred raised an eyebrow at the brown-skinned adventurer before him, then turned his head slightly to gaze at his daughter, who was eagerly nodding her head.
"Tell me again how you met my daughter,"
Fred asked, trying to shake off an odd fog that seemed to be covering his thoughts.
"Of course, sir,"
Anodyne gave Millie a subtle wink.
"I met your daughter during one of her classes at the guild. She showed remarkable ability, and we became friends. Upon my return from that horrible mission, I was asked by the guildmaster to watch your daughter and her friend. I needed the peace and quiet after..."
Anodyne paused dramatically and sighed. Fred rubbed his head.
Yeah, I understand. A heck of a thing that prince made you do. Since I also have this odd sense of trust in you, I leave their safety in your hands.
The two shook hands, Fred noting how firm, yet oddly soft, the other's hand was.
Papa, Millie spoke up sweetly, now that the adventurers are back, you should prepare a drinking contest for them. Look, Anodyne and I have finished setting up a cask for it.
The two ladies gestured dramatically at the large wooden barrel, taller than a grown man, newly placed at the back of the bar. It had a few spigots for pouring ale, and a large hose traveling up the ceiling into the back practice area.
"Does this have anything to do with that drink you gave me last night?" Fred asked in concern. "Because, dear, as good as it tasted, no one is going to want a drink that knocks them out on the first sip."
"No, no, that was the control drink. See, Anodyne helped me set up this magic pump from the well so that this cask is always producing the booze with the right amount of watering down."
"When did you have time to make all this?"
Fred gleamed from the fog over his mind.
"I was only out a night. When did we have a well in the back?"
Millie gestured to Claire, who was hiding on top of Fred's head, to keep her spell working. Anodyne, in the meantime, discreetly glared at the tentacle forming on the cask, which was a well-disguised treasure slime. The well was actually the hidden passage back to the dungeon, where water slimes were constantly sending the needed water down the tube to the waiting booze slime inside the cask. The metal spigots were real, pilfered from the newly rebuilt pantry. It had taken Doc only a few minutes to calculate the necessary ratio of booze slime to water to create a drink safe enough for adventurers to consume without falling at the first sip. Of course, Claire was working extremely hard to lower Fred's awareness of the amount of time needed for these projects to have been completed and Anodyne's slightly lackluster past.
"Did you forget, Papa?" Millie asked pointedly. "You were always complaining about having to carry water back to the tavern or spending money on water crystals, correct? Well, Rowan and I have been hard at work maintaining that well in the back to help you out. He's there now, working himself almost to death so that the well is finished properly. You should really spread the word for the party tonight. I'm sure everyone would enjoy it."
"Spread the word? Yeah, I should," Fred mumbled and scratched his head. "All right, then. Miss Anodyne, take good care of my little girl and my ward. I'm off to spread the word."
With that, the tavern owner stumbled out the door, Claire leaving him to fly back to Millie. The pixie girl panted softly.
"That was tough," she stammered. "Your father has some very high mental resistance. It wasn't easy to dampen his logic. There's a good chance he'll realize something's wrong in a few hours, so I'll have to stay behind to cast my spell again."
"Does that mean you won't come with me to the dungeon?" Millie confirmed. Claire shook her head.
"No, we really can't risk your father figuring out what we're up to. As a former adventurer, he'll likely be very hostile to us dungeon monsters. Learning that we've been messing with his head won't go over well either. Adventurers always hate it when others do that. Just leave the twins with me and go with Anodyne."
"Playdate with Mama,"
the twins chorused happily, causing the other three girls to smile. Anodyne saluted Claire.
"I'll make sure Millie reaches the dungeon. You can count on me, Claire."
Claire's eyes flashed with an unknown emotion as she nodded in confirmation.
"All right, I trust you. Millie, all I can say is have fun in the dungeon and try not to die."
Before Millie had time to react, Anodyne scooped her up and flowed swiftly out the back door. In the back, the well sat in the back corner, with the water hose coming out of it, wide enough for two grown men to walk down into. Millie cheered as the slime girl carried her down into the darkness.
"You're so fast," Millie observed, as the two sped down the tunnel toward the dungeon. "And I don't feel a single bump."
Anodyne snorted.
"Don't compare me to a cart. My body is pure comfort until I attack."
"I believe it."
Millie giggled and cooed as she slunk deeper into the slime girl's embrace. The two stayed silent for a few minutes as Anodyne continued to move through the tunnels.
"Hey," Millie spoke up, "shouldn't we have reached the dungeon by now? With your speed, the distance between the tavern and the dungeon entrance should be short." "It's a concession Doc made after Claire discussed this new entrance with him," Anodyne explained. Using his spatial control, this tunnel has been enlarged by several thousand times to dissuade adventurers from trying to reach him. Think of the distance as the same as if you added every floor in the dungeon together.
That's a neat trick, though with the size of the tunnel as it is now, they could always just bring a horse and carriage down here.
Anodyne pondered the fact. I'll inform Doc about it. He'll likely either decrease the tunnel size or add some slime monsters to guard it. Thanks for your help, Millie.
No problem, the adventurer in training grinned.
So, since we have all this time, want to talk?
What about?
Oh, do you want to hear more about the dungeon? This will be your first time entering the dungeon, correct?
Millie shook her head.
No, I want to talk about you.
Anodyne said nothing.
I'm not that interesting,
she spoke evenly a second later.
My only interest is serving my lord.
That's not true, isn't it? Millie poked the slime around her. I'm a chosen of the goddess of desire, remember? An ability I don't often speak of is that I can see the level of a person's strongest desire. Frankly, yours seems to have dimmed since your return from the guild.
My loyalty to Doc has never wavered,
Anodyne spat in annoyance.
You misunderstand, Millie soothed in apology. When I say dimmed, I don't mean the amount of desire itself, but rather its intensity. Before, your desire burned forth like the sun. Now, that same desire is pulsing evenly like the waves of the sea, at least to what I imagine what waves look like. I've never been to the ocean. Anyway, you learned something in the Adventurers Guild, didn't you, Princess?
With a shrill scream, Millie was launched into the air as Anodyne froze. Her momentum carrying her, the teen barely managed to get her balance before skipping across the ground on her feet, her arms waving rapidly. With a sigh, she plopped onto her butt and rubbed her legs.
That hurt, she complained. At least warn me next time.
Anodyne unfroze at Millie's complaints.
I'm sorry, she apologized.
Don't be, Millie waved her off. I'm used to people freezing after I reveal some secret. Rowan, Claire, Master Mary, Sir Gannis, really everyone I've met recently seems to think freezing is the best way to express shock. Do you all have some sort of secret agreement or something?
The joke, while weak, was enough to cause Anodyne to chuckle, breaking the tension that had started to rise.
No, I don't think there's a conspiracy against you, Anodyne grinned.
Though, as long as you keep growing in strength, I'm sure someone will start one.
Great, Millie rolled her eyes. What every adventurer wants, politics. Why can't we just leave that stuff behind us?
I know, right?
Anodyne folded her arms and frowned.
Someone always needs something, and eventually their desires will conflict with someone else's. After that, one must either compromise or start a conflict. That's why I like serving Doc. There isn't a need for nonsense beyond just living and fighting.
So, you do remember your past life? Millie glanced backward toward her companion.
I mean, I was incredibly surprised when Claire told me who you used to be. I couldn't even begin to compare you and the previous you, but I suppose a life started with minimum intelligence and few responsibilities would change anyone.
Anodyne giggled.
Well, that's one way to look at it. I really don't see it as anything more than a former life. I'm still processing all these new memories. It's very odd, as if seeing them through someone else's eyes and not quite feeling what they felt.
Do you miss any of it? Millie asked.
Anodyne smiled sadly and shook her head. No, as I said, even if they used to be a part of me, those memories are not mine. I died in the dungeon and was reborn as someone new. I could have lived my entire existence without those memories and been fine.
How can you say that about your previous memories? Millie grumbled at the slime, turning around to glare at her.
Even if you say they're from a past life, they are still your souls, aren't they? I can't believe you don't feel any emotional attachment to them, especially given how defensively you acted when I said your old title.
Anodyne shrugged.
What can I say? I'm a slime, and I've mercilessly killed and devoured my master's prey.
I no longer possess the morality of a human, nor the desires or fears your kind are plagued by. I go into battle fully expecting to die, knowing all the while that I'll respawn later. Why should I limit myself to your petty existence? No offense.
Millie grunted.
Fine, but what about the people? Do you not feel anything for your friends, family?
I can't say that I do not miss my family,
Anodyne admitted.
However, if they came into the dungeon, I would still kill them without a second's thought. Perhaps, however, I would grant them a swift and unexpected death to prevent them from feeling pain. I might spend a little more time over that foolish older brother of mine, though. What was that idiot thinking, sending all the adventurers away?
Anodyne continued to mutter angry, choice words under her breath.
And what about Master Mary? Millie finally asked. I know she misses you dearly, her and Adventurer Fiora. We've wasted enough time, Anodyne said, blithely ignoring the little adventurer. Come on, let's get you to Master Doc. He's very eager to have you try out his newly readjusted traps, courtesy of Rowan's help.
Seeing she would get nothing else from the slime girl, Millie let herself be carried down into the darkness of the dungeon.
Report, Mary ordered. She felt an odd sense of deja vu, except this time she was waiting outside her office instead of at her desk.
We have confirmed magical traces left behind, Bella confirmed. A magical creature has indeed been inside your office. Nothing appears to have been taken, but a certain file was heavily examined. The trail ends at the guild entrance. It appears it just walked out.
Is it you? Mary wondered in her mind. Did you come to check on me? Maybe to spy on me? Are you doing well?
Is there anything that can be done to track down the culprit, or at least learn of its identity? Mary asked out loud.
Clara looked out of the room and shook her head.
No, ma'am. It hid itself almost flawlessly. If it hadn't left such a mess, I doubt you would have easily noticed someone or something had been inside. We've added additional security glyphs and wards, however, so the intruder won't have such an easy time if it returns.
All right. Thank you, girls.
Mary dismissed them. She strolled inside her office as the two receptionists left. Mary bent down and gathered together the contents of her folder, taking great care to return them to the box and stow it back on the shelf. With a loving caress, she rubbed the box and wiped a tear from her eye.
Master Mary! Master Mary!
Clara ran into the office.
Quickly, you must come to the entrance. It's Fiora!
Mary turned and practically flew out of her office and down the stairs. There, surrounded by adventurers who were moving the wounded, Fiora stood tall with her team. With them were many other adventurers and members of the Ranger Corps, including an unconscious Prince Ken and Leo. While everyone was wounded to various degrees, Fiora and her team of three looked the worst. They were burned, scraped, cut, and even held a few arrows still stuck in their armor. Fiora barely looked conscious, but refused the healers. Her dead eyes lit up at the sight of Mary.
Mission accomplished, she croaked,
handing over two small seals into the hands of her master. Her job done, nothing held the broken adventurer as she collapsed, barely caught by two healers.
Quickly, get them to the infirmary,
Mary roared out, startling everyone in the room.
And someone, run to every merchant and store that sells medicine. Buy it all and bring it here. Use the Adventurers Guild's name. Save their lives.
The guildmaster dropped the seals into her pocket. With a quick flourish of her hands and a muttered spell, Mary's eyes turned bright red as she took control of the blood of every wounded adventurer and stopped it from bleeding out. Straining from the effort, she looked around at the shocked adventurers.
Didn't you all hear me? Move!
Chapter 24
For the safe return of the warriors of Durin and their completion of their mission, cheers!
Fred yelled, lifting his mug high into the air.
Cheers!
The many patrons within the tavern screamed together, and everyone downed their drink in a single chug.
"Hey, Fred," Hamish called out. "You sure it's all right serving this many free drinks when the whole town's still on rations? We don't want you closed."
"Ha ha," Fred chortled. "My brilliant and fearless daughter has created an entirely new type of ale, and you can all have as much as you want. I summoned you folk to celebrate, so celebrate to your heart's content."